And maybe let's start getting her into competitive dance classes.
To be honest, most managers and agents will not sign children who are under the age of 8 or 9.
You know, had a couple voice lessons just to get her familiar with, and she got up and sang her Ariel song. Absorbed the information and kind of came home and said, well, if she's likes this and gonna do this, I feel like we should make some choices now. Like things like we got her passport.
Welcome to Making It Happen, a career in the performing arts where we discuss how to break into the performing arts industry for yourself or your child, teen, or young adult. Guests include professionals who are passionate and share my vision of helping talented individuals land professional representation and have successful careers in the arts. My name is Lisa Solek, and I am the CEO and founder of Making It Happen, a career in the performing arts online courses, having helped hundreds of clients break into the performing arts business on stage, in films, television, commercial work, and more. This podcast is supplemental to my groundbreaking online courses. For more information, check out all the ways that you can benefit from my courses, how-to videos, live seminars, my free weekly newsletter, and free guides. Go to lbctalent.com. My guest today is Teresa Pfefferly.
You watch them prepare the food for the shoot, which is not how you would think, you know, how they prepare food for television and print is not how you actually prepare food. You know what I mean? Like the things that they put on the food and like kind of like cook it on with a butane fire or whatever to make it shiny and not real.
They put oil. Yeah. They put oil on things to make it look, look more appetizing, I guess. But yeah, God forbid the child eats it when they're not supposed to eat that piece of whatever they put.
Oh yeah, no. And there was one little boy. He had to eat the steak so many times. And they were putting honey on it for him because he didn't like steak. And they had like a little, I call it like a little barf bag. Like he would eat it and chew it. And then when the shot was over, he would lean over and spit in the bag.
Yeah, the whole world of it is interesting. If you've never, you know, seen it or understood it, you don't have any other family members that are involved. It is a very strange kind of dynamic. But, you know right away, I think, you know, if you have a young child and you end up on these sets with them, you'll know right away whether or not the child is meant for this and whether they can handle themselves in that setting, which is important to note. You know, if your child is not happy in that space, then it definitely...
We definitely took your advice on that. I think you had said you used to have a meeting with your kids every 6 months. And so I just figured Tony Robbins says, if you want to see someone who's successful, if you want to be successful at something, emulate someone else who's already done it before you and mimic that behavior. Yeah. So I was like, all right. So I would sit down with her, 6 years old, you know, and we would go to lunch and it'd be like, so do you like what you're doing? Do you want to keep doing it? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. It's okay if you don't want to, you know, like I consistently have those periodic conversations with her because, like you said, this is a business. It's expensive business. And for us, it's expensive. Mm-hmm. It's a commitment. So it makes no sense to push them if they're not having fun. They don't want to do something. It makes no sense to spend our money, stress mm-hmm. our kid out, and mm-hmm. put her manager and her agent in a situation where they're sending a kid out because that's income to them who isn't into whatever, mm-hmm. you know, is happening. Yeah. So we often did that. She always said, yes, I want to still do this, you know?
Yeah.
We would do the same thing with like dancing. Like if you had to choose between this and this, like it was always like she was horseback riding for a while. And then we got to a point where the horseback riding made me nervous because they were wanting to move her up to jumping. And I did not want her to jump, you know, a little baby jumps I was okay with, but I didn't want her to be a jumper because I was like, we're spending all of this time and effort and finances in dancing and competing. Why, this seems counterintuitive to me to get on a horse and jump over some jumps and where you could fall and injure yourself and then you'd be out. And so we made her choose. One point we said, listen, we know you love your horse. We know you love to ride, but you have to pick one.
I think it's the same with anything else too. You know, if somebody is a great baseball player and they want to do that and they start playing football, you start to say, maybe we should do some cross training instead of deciding to play football if we're just a really great baseball player. You know, you have to kind of start to focus and get a little bit more, you know, laser focused on what it is that the kids want to do.
And so, you know, I was thinking about something I said. I was telling you guys a story before about what it's like in the room and the different types of auditions. And it reminded me there's a couple like little anecdotal things that I think are worth mentioning with the auditions. Like we had one time in a snowstorm, it was a state of emergency, gone in for an audition, and that was Sound of Music. And while we were in the city, I had said to my husband, I made him come with us. He wanted to come with us. I think, I don't remember if I made him or he wanted to because of the weather. We were the only ones on the road, us and the ice trucks. Or salt.
And this was going or coming home?
It was going. We went in a state of emergency and we got there and she had the audition. And afterwards I said, we should spend the night. And my husband said, no. We have to go home. We have animals. There's snow. I had to plow the driveway. We're about an hour and a half. Well, door to door, it was 2 hours, right? So it was really like an hour and 15 minutes. No traffic, straight run. Then the alarm went off and they were alarming everyone in the city that they were closing the tunnel. And so he was like, that's it, we're leaving. And so we left, drove home, got about a mile from our house, got stuck in the snow because there was so much snow and it had blown like, you know, whatever. And then we get a notification that they want us for a callback the next morning. And I just don't think this is going to happen. Like, I don't think we'll be able to get out. Like, we can't even get down our driveway. And so the manager was like, it's all right. Don't worry about it. There's nothing you could do about it. And of course, in hindsight, you look back, you know, she jokes with me about that and says, that's the one. That would have been the one that would have made all the difference, Mom, you know. But there's something to be said for, like, you have to be okay as a parent making those decisions and being okay knowing that there could be consequences to those decisions. Like, I can't make it today or I can't make the callback. We never wanted to say no, but I know, like, the whole summer vacation conversation comes up because you have to be okay saying, if you're not prepared to get on a plane and leave your vacation, you have to be okay saying, I need this 7 days. I need 7 days. Mm-hmm. I'm off. Just block me out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's tricky because sometimes the managers and agents, they know what's coming down the pike. And if there's something perfect for your child that they know based on a relationship they've had with your kid as their manager or agent, they know that they could book it. They're looking at, you know, obviously they're making the funds that they're making because they're getting that percentage. But on the other side of it too, they're looking at it like, okay, if you're out for a week, the week before, anything that's shooting that week. So whatever's auditioning even a month before that might be shooting that week, you're out of. And then anything that is auditioning that week for the future, the next how many weeks, you're out of. So yeah, but sometimes as a family, you have to make that decision. I had one client who they, kids involved in the industry, they were always going to audition, same thing, same experiences, similar kind of things in the New York market. They decided to go to, I believe it might have been Ocean City, Maryland, something like that. And while they were on the vacation, and she owned a business as well, Teresa. She had, you know, a business that was took up a lot of her time and they rarely went on vacation. And this was kind of a big deal. And the son got a call back for a big commercial. I think it was Campbell's Soup. So it was like a big national commercial and the residuals on it would have been like, you know, 50 to 100K. For a year of it running, you know, that kind of money. And I remember like it was yesterday, she called me. She said, what should we do? We don't know what to do. You know, we haven't had this vacation. He had a sister. And I said, you know, it's a bet. It's like you're betting on this. You know, if you take one day, it's one day out of your vacation, you could drive into the city, do the callback. What are the chances he's going to get it? You don't know. You don't know if there's 50 kids in the callback. You don't know if there's 10 or 20, whatever it is. You have to make that assessment. Could it be, I remember saying this to her, could it be a daddy-daughter day on vacation and you drive your son or vice versa, you know, so that you can kind of make it work. And I think you have to look at the glass half full in those situations. At least that was my perspective. I always try to make it work and make it fun for the kids and never make it feel like there was this effort or this kind of negative kind of vibe on the rest of the family. Like, we always tried to make it work that way. But it's tricky. You have to figure out what works for you. And like you're saying, be okay with that. Be okay with your decision. You know, even if your daughter as a teen, does she still bug you about it?
No. She was very good. Like everything rolled off of her back almost for me, way more than me. And sometimes I would be frustrated because there almost seemed like there were no stakes for her. And in fact, there was an Annie audition that we got a call back for that she refused to warm up. She, I don't know, had a hair up her butt or something, and just it was like a power thing. And so we get to the audition. She signs in. I go, we're Ripley, so it takes me, I had to go to the bathroom. So I go to the bathroom. They take her while I'm in the bathroom. I come out. She's in the room. We were there for 5 minutes. And none of the things that they told her to be prepared with, they did. It was totally something else. And I was like, so that's it? And she was like, yeah, that was it. And I was so like flustered. Like I just lost it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one time we had friction. Mm-hmm. Her and I had friction because I was like, if you're not going to take this seriously, I am not going to do this anymore. I don't know if that was a good or a bad moment. Who knows? It was just a moment. Because it's a big commitment. There was one audition that she cried.
Oh, really?
It was just one. Everything else, she just rolled.
Yeah. I think the kids do have to have that kind of attitude, even if they, you know, you want to put stakes on it, that you want them to do well in the room. They, you know, they want to do their best work in the room. And hopefully that's the case. But I think the kids who go to the auditions and then forget about them and just go on to the next thing, and they enjoy that moment of being in the room and sharing what they love with people who also love that same thing, is where the head has to be. Because yeah, I think it could get crazy, because I think there are a lot of kids out there that possibly are being pushed into the industry by parents who know they're talented enough, but maybe they're not ready.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't have, they want everything. They want all of the, they want to book everything. They don't understand. And a lot of that too comes from what happens in their small town. They're a big fish in a small pond, and then they go into getting rep and doing this, and they don't understand as a child. Another reason to have management meetings with your child, you know?
Well, like for as much effort as you put in, someone else is always going to have more time and more money and have put more effort in.
Yeah.
And or had the right look or the right sound or the right twinkle or whatever it is. Like,
yeah, you have to love the process, and you have to love, I mean, I don't know. How do you feel? Do you feel that you're closer to Lila as a parent?
Oh,
because
yeah,
of this, like I feel that it changes everything. I don't remember if we talked about this when you guys started or not, but I feel like a lot of people, they're so hell bent on getting their child signed with a manager and agent. Once that happens and they start actually going to these things, it puts into perspective everything else. It puts into perspective the school play or the dance recital.
Yes.
Remember,
yes.
I think we did talk about that, because people get so hyped up in like small towns about, you know, who got the lead in the play and who got the, you know, the
stuff that just
the
doesn't
dance
matter.
Recital. And as soon as you start doing professional work, it's literally, I feel like that space becomes this relaxed.
I could, you know, she danced competitively kind of at the beginning of this, but it's similar when you're committed to any sport at a high level. You're not going to every birthday party. You're not going to every family event. Right? Like there's been so many things that she did not participate in that we just were like, Lila's busy. Lila's dancing. Lila's competing. Lila's in the city. Lila has an event. And I think for her, that definitely shows up in her level of maturity with her peers, her age, who are not doing the things that she's doing. And she also has selectively selected a lot of those people out of her life peer-wise because of that. Like she just kind of like has no tolerance for the drama that a normal teenage drama, like normal stuff that normal kids, which is nothing wrong with. She has no place for that. In fact, one of her best friends that she's been friends with for a very long time, since they were five, is a competitive jumper, horse jumper. And they pulled her out of school probably a year or two after Lila was pulled out. And they travel the Florida circuit in the winter. So they bought a second house down there, and she's competing, moving her way through the levels. I don't know what it's called in the horse world, but sure. Moving her way to be pre-Olympic. And they get along fabulously, and they don't see each other all the time, and they don't talk all the time. But when they see each other, they love, hug and kiss each other and laugh and giggle mm-hmm. and all of those things. But they get it because they're both the same level yes. of intensity in what they're doing.
I totally agree with you. I think being in the industry with a child, it brings you closer to the child, obviously, because you're trying to help them. And if you can keep it, if you can keep yourself sane through the process, because I think too, I want to mention, we end up being like middle management. Do you know what I mean? Like we're dealing with the agents and managers and the emails that we're getting from them as far as what our child is going to be given an opportunity to audition for. We want to say yes, like you said, we want to say yes to things because we know this is important to the agent or manager because this is their how they put food on their table and a roof over their head. And yet on the other side of it, we also are balancing the relationship with the child, the training of the child, and being able to, you know, make sure that they're happy and doing their best work. And we're the ones who have to hide the stress on both ends.
Yes.
You know, yeah. So it's definitely like middle management. If you've ever had a job in middle management, this is what it is. So you have to figure out how you're going to balance that.
How you're going to help them self-tape and not want to scream at them because they're giving you a little whatever.
Yeah, or they're tired or they're hungry yes. or whatever.
That they're being and it's like tated. The 15th time you've taped it because they can't get that one line right or whatever, yeah. you know?
Yeah. And yeah. I think they have, you know, sometimes I think the kids, they're having fun with us.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Because they understand at a different level than generally than what, you know, there's definitely a whole different level of stuff.
Yeah, I think so. Well, because they're kids and they don't need to see and understand the other side of it to a full extent. So they don't need to see and understand the time, effort, money, and the coordination that you have to do with their world as well as the agent manager world. They don't need to see that. So you have to be a parent who's willing to be
to give them the vanilla version that they need yes. to hear and deal yes. with the other stuff and just mm-hmm. kind of let them know calm, keep them as calm and safe as possible in all of it, in the preparing, in the auditioning, in the post-auditioning, in the callbacks, like all yes. of just really yes. like, you know, when they're little, it might look like, oh, yay, this is fun. When we're done, we get to go get a slice of pizza or some ice cream or, yes. oh, well, there's our favorite crepe place in this part of town where these auditions are. So we get to go get crepes today. We tied food treats to a lot of the locations because it was the same locations for different things. Mm-hmm. And so every time you had to go in Chelsea where Milk Studios is. So we would always, she always, always, always wanted a strawberry Nutella crepe. So that was always the treat.
Yeah. Well, part of it too, I think, is the timing, right? You're picking them up after school, you're driving in, it's taking you an hour and a half, whatever, you're getting to the audition. All those things are happening. So in, at least in this market, and I would believe it's the same if you are living an hour and a half outside of LA or Vancouver or Atlanta, wherever.
LA might be worse with the traffic.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you got a point there. But the, you know,
I really need to be there the day before.
No. Yeah, there you go. Oh gosh, I'm gonna say that. But yeah, but they're hungry for dinner.
Yeah,
actually
yeah.
hungry. Like yes. I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and one time. So what I had to learn the timing. So if the audition was at 5:30, there's no way I could leave the city. Even if we had to be home, because if you try to leave at that time, it is the worst rush hour and you're going out of the tunnel. And especially if you're down in Chelsea, you need to go out of the Holland Tunnel. And so we were in line to get into the tunnel for an hour and a half. In fact, that was one time where she was climbing around on the back floor of the car looking for like peanuts and raisins that had spilled like on her way to a dance competition. And I was like, all right, listen, there's a cart up the block. Here is $10. Get out of the car, run up to the cart and get a hot dog or a pretzel. And I promise I won't leave you. Like just get something.
And this is while you're on the way into the tunnel.
This is on our way out because we had sat out so long.
And you're in the city and you're yes. on the way out of the city.
Oh my God. It took us like 4 hours to get home that night. Yes.
That's crazy. Yeah. You learn quick that
you learn. My husband was not the best carrier of getting her in and out.
Okay.
And so thinking is not the same as mine. And whereas he was more concerned about, highly concerned about safety in the city, made him nervous. And they got in a Port Authority or a Penn Station, and she had to go to the bathroom, and he wouldn't let her go because he did not want to take her into the men's room for fear of not knowing what was going to be in the men's room. And he couldn't go into the women's room at the time. There was no laws that allowed for multigender. And so he's trekking up 8th Avenue with her, and she's like, "Dad, I really have to go to the bathroom." Now, I know that I know the places, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the places that you're couple blocks, you know, here and there and wherever that you can sneak into and use a bathroom.
Yep.
He did not. And in his mind, he was like, "I just have to get you there. We will get, just hold it, and we will get to the bathroom when we get there," which it ended up turning into wherever this location was, there was construction. So they get to the casting office, and the girl at the table says, "Oh, you have to go to this floor to go to the bathroom." So they get into the elevator, they get to that floor, and the construction crew is there. They're like, "No bathrooms. You got to go to this other floor." So by the time that had happened, she had peed her pants in the poor girl, peed her pants in the elevator. So after that, thank God she had a change of clothes with her. And, you know, that was, of course, little girl problems, right? But she always would be like, "Mom, I don't really want down to
bring that."
But right? That's like another thing with a little kid you have to think about and learn and build into your dynamic of, okay, hydration, food, bathroom,
extra clothes.
All the things.
So, you know, this is great. let's jump. If you have time still, I really, really want you to talk about the thought process to having her leave public school and do distance learning program.
Well, it started to become, I could tell, a little stressful for her leaving class. So I want to say she was maybe in sixth grade. I could tell there were times where when I would pick her up at lunch to take her in, she would be irritated. And I would try to talk to her about it. Like, she would calm down eventually by the time we got to the city, but she would be irritated that she missed whatever they were going over in class because she is the little A type and didn't like to miss content. And then she felt like she didn't necessarily know what was happening when she got in the next day. Although the teachers kept reassuring me she was fabulous and great and had no issues and there were no concerns with them, for her, it was stressing her out. And so we had talked about it, but I was kind of afraid to pull the trigger. And then we had an incident where she was performing at 54 Below and there was an after party. We got home at 1 or 2 in the morning. And so I took her into school an hour late the next day. So what was that, maybe like 9:30? I don't know. It's like by 10 a.m. she was in class. And when I was signing her in, the secretary, well-meaning, without having any context of anything, without knowing anything, the poor secretary said, "Oh, Lila, just so you know, when you're tardy, that ruins your ability to have perfect attendance." And that was the moment for me that I decided enough was enough. Like, I got probably more irritated than I needed to. And I had asked for the principal after she got signed into class, and I pulled the principal aside and I said, "Under no certain circumstances is your staff to ever discuss my daughter's attendance with her. Unacceptable. You know, she's however old she was." I said, "She performed in the city last night at 54 Below for, you know, like, you may or may not know what that is,
but that's a big deal."
But that's a big deal. And she's an hour late for school. I said, "And I am pretty certain that her one commercial she did last year, she made more money than the secretary. And so this is unacceptable for me." And of course, the principal was very apologetic. "I'm so sorry. They didn't know because it wasn't something that we necessarily discussed or talked about with all of the staff. It was just, you know, the principal was very empathetic. But for me, I just felt like I'm setting her up in a lose-lose situation if I keep her in this dynamic where she's getting pulled by two worlds, either she's in or she's not. And let's just see." Like, it was kind of like, let's just rip this Band-Aid off and see what happens. And maybe this will give us more time where she could have like piano lessons and more downtime. And so I'm so thrilled that we did. It ended up being 6 months, 8 months before. It was like the September before COVID hit. So by the time COVID got here, we already were distance learning. Or it might have been the year before COVID, maybe, but we had already been distance learning. So it wasn't a thing for us. And we were just like, whatever. And she was able to add piano and guitar. I noticed that her level of intensity with her dancing at the time, like she was way more zeroed in and focused and because she had the time to.
Yeah.
And so
they're not fired from a 6 hour day or 7 hour day at school. And many times in public schools, they're wasting about half of that time.
I was just going to say, there's probably 4 hours of instruction in a given day. And so what's amazing is now she's in the American Institute for Musical Theater, or Institute for American Musical Theater, right? It's in Manhattan. It's a performing arts school trade college. And she was accepted and invited to participate haphazardly. It was this kind of funny anecdotal story, but haphazardly at 14 was invited to participate. So we had planned on transitioning her back into high school as a freshman, but instead at the last minute, we pivoted and moved her into Manhattan. And she's been attending that full time as a level 4 dancer, thanks to you. And that's their highest level. Mm-hmm. So she's in room with other kids who are dancing at her level or better, which was important. And there was two other girls who are under the age of 18. Both of them have been distance learning. One of them just got their GED. The other one is actually doing an accredited online school, and she's going to be going to college, actually not for musical theater, but for like musical therapy. It's kind of fun that she has other kids who have a similar experience, like other people like her. And it's not a bad thing. Like I definitely think there's, you know, for the average student who doesn't know what they want to do with their world, great public schools, right? You build great relationships and you get to have all these normal experiences and exchanges with kids your age, learning what you like along the way. But she always knew, like, we always supported this as much as we have, because she always seemed to know. She was the one that said, I want to get up and do that. And at 8 years old, when she showed up to a dance competition with a fever, having thrown up before we got there, and insisted that she wanted to perform, and was purple lips and shivering in the wings, and then got up and performed, and then came down and went to sleep. That for me was why I was like, we don't have a choice.
Which is wonderful that you guys have been supporting her the way you have, because, you know, like you telling that story, you're giving me chills, because seriously, that is the thing.
That's what makes me, that brings tears to me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then I could tell you probably a handful of times after that where she was performing at the Green Room, and there's one of our teachers had hosted an event there, and there's, you know, 25 kids performing, and she had planned on, had worked for like a month ahead of time on a specific number, and that day shows up and she's got 102 fever and a runny nose, and she goes in and performs. And it might not have been her best performance, you know what I mean? To have an 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 12-year-old with that sort of like drive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so grateful after, you know, she's the baby of 5, and I could definitely say she has the strongest work ethic innate in her. And I think it's the performing, you know what I mean? I think, you think it's all of that that has built that into her. It's made her that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even though, like, even going back to what you said earlier, when she was younger and you said, oh, I wish there were more stakes for her, but actually, there probably was. It was there. She wanted it. You know, maybe she wasn't showing it, or she was, you know, just kind of trying to, you know, play a little bit with the control pieces of all of that.
Sure.
She's going through the process, but it builds in them so that by the time they're older teens, young adults, they're literally ready for the industry. I mean, she is so far ahead. Just to reiterate what you just said so that people understand, you're looking at a young teen at 14 who is invited into a collegiate program, a 2-year intensified collegiate program that is amazing in New York City, offers classes that are with Broadway stars, professional icons. They're getting acting, singing, dancing, all of it.
Even more. Like, first of all, his level of love for the performing arts and for these kids is so evident and special that I remember saying to myself, like, I could never rob her. Like when he said, I think your kid's pretty amazing and I would like to take her in the program if she's willing and wants to come. I could never rob her of that opportunity to be with people like that. Like I felt like if I said no, I would be robbing her. Because there's so many people jaded around the world and all kinds of different, you know, genres of life, but especially like to have something that special. And because of his finance background, his training in finance, he's teaching them about finance, about business, and he's teaching them about like being a safe place for each other and what a great, amazing, magical thing that is. And a lot of the teachers, like you said, they're performers, they're professionals, they're, you know, in theater, they're teaching at Broadway Dance Center, they're teaching at TIPS. So it's definitely the community, like building and crossover you want to be part of.
He's also offering the students an opportunity to meet casting directors, agents, and managers. Is that correct?
Correct. He definitely brings them in. They have Agent April every year where they bring in agents and kids have an opportunity to workshop with them and get notes, which you heard me say before, you get zero feedback.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they come in and they're willing to meet the kids and give them notes and some of them get signed as a result of it is an amazing thing. And Lila got to participate in the Share Pre-Pro. I don't probably cannot articulate as well as you what that means, but my understanding is it's when the choreographer for the show, for the tour, she handpicked a group of kids to work with, to work out her choreography and to fine tune it before she met with the cast to run it on the cast.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, pre-pro. And a lot of people don't have an opportunity to do pre-pro until they're deep set into the Broadway community. They've done a couple of Broadway shows or a Broadway show, and they seem to be that type of performer who is going to be really great and collaborative and grounded with who they are as a performer. And then the choreographers or the directors are going to invite them in to do pre-pro of sort, whatever that is. And it's magical that she got to do that for the Share tour.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. So now she is 16, correct?
Yes.
And she is going to be
graduating
out of the collegiate program. That's incredible.
Yes.
Incredible. Oh my God. So do you have any idea what she's going to want to do and moving on? Because she's not, I think this question would come up for the listeners. She's not 18 yet. Can she audition for professional work at this point? Like, what are your feelings? Are you still working that out?
I'm still sort of working that out and trying to take the lead from her. Like the last year and a half, we have not submitted for anything outside of any submissions she might have done through the school. And we did, you know, the management company during COVID finally closed after many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And her active manager at the time moved on and started his own agency, but only took children who had active contracts. And at the time, she did not have an active contract. And then I had reached out. And at the same time, simultaneously, she had a huge growth spurt. 12 years old, she was 5'7", 5'6", 5'7".
Mm-hmm.
So way too tall to work on Broadway. And then COVID. And so she had been with innovative artists and Barbara Coleman, who was wonderful and lovely to work with. Mm-hmm. But Barbara was like, listen, you know, COVID, and I just can't. I have nothing for her. So I'm going to clean her off my roster. She's been amazing. So, you know, I think had COVID not happened, that might have been different.
Yeah.
You know? And which was our intention in getting her involved so early.
Mm-hmm.
Have developed the relationship to carry through the phase where they're not working because there is that age gap
where you
train and not work.
Yes.
And so, but that's okay because everything, we've talked about this before, like you just don't know. Everything kind of happens magically for a reason and you don't know until later. And so, and I lost my train of thought.
Well, you know what? Here's, I loved where you were going because, you know, let me explain one thing to everyone. So we've talked about this before with other guests, but between the ages of, for Lila, it was 12 and it'll be to 17. For other people, it's maybe 14 to 17, 15 to 17. It just depends on when they grow and develop and start to look like an adult. When they start to look like an adult, a production company is going to be able to hire an adult 18 plus to play 15, 16, 17. So there's this gap that happens. And some teens work through that time if they look younger than their age. Because if you're 15 to 17 and you look 12 or 13, they're going to hire you because you're going to be just more mature and you're going to be able to work more hours and all of those things based on the rules in the state that you're working in. So for kids who are too tall or don't fit in that space, like Lila was tall for her age, there's not going to be a lot there for them. And you as a parent, you want to find different things for them to do. Cabarets they can perform at, all that kind of stuff. You want to work on training and everything. And for Lila, the best thing that happened was that because the training became such an important part of it. And you were smart to keep that going and not just go, oh, well, we're not going to a lot of auditions now other than our own submissions. So we're not going to train. Right. People do that, right? So then what happens? And if you want to talk about how, didn't she go to a summer program?
She went to the summer program. So they have a summer, month-long summer intensive.
It's IAMT.
Yes.
Institute for American Musical Theater. Okay.
And I had, because we were still trying to figure out, so there were some changes in her dance company that were coming at the time. And we were kind of like, what are we going to, you know, her and I would talk about what are we going to do and, you know, where do we want to be and all of that. And so I had sent him an email and I had simply said, hey, would you consider allowing her to participate in some of the classes in the fall? And I was thinking that maybe we could come in, maybe we could keep her homeschooled versus going back to high school, and maybe we could come in 2 days a week. And when he called and the conversation progressed and he offered her to participate fully, he said, if your kid wants to come, I would take her. She was in the passenger seat in the car and heard him say that we were driving to the school. As I stayed with a friend in Queens, so I would drive her back and forth every day for that because at the time at 14, I didn't want to leave her in the dorms. And so I would stay with her and would drive her back. And so she heard him say that. And I turned to her and she shook her head. So that's why I couldn't say no. Mm-hmm. I mean, and of course, that's a whole other, we could probably do an episode about like how to make those decisions and have those conversations with my husband and with her and what all of that looked like. Cause that was a lot of intense 2 weeks, 3 weeks of making.
I remember.
Yeah. So like I said, that could be its own whole conversation. Cause that's a lot of the decisions that you have to make as a parent and involving her, you know, but there's two parents and two parents have to be on the same page and the kid has to be comfortable and you have to be comfortable. And it's sort of like a very collaborative dynamic. And so, so now that she's 16 and going to be graduating, we have a year before she probably, most likely, practically speaking, is marketable. Mm-hmm. And so then we have to decide and we're still figuring that out. Are we going to try to keep the apartment in the city and stay somewhat involved in this program in like a custom solution? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to pull her home and let her go to high school for a year? Are we going to keep her homeschooled? Is she going to like just take the bus to the city 2-3 days a week and take classes? Like, we don't really know all those answers yet. And probably in typical Pfefferly form, it'll be sort of like a last minute. This is what's going to happen.
This is what we're going to
do. Okay.
Yeah, this is what we're going to do. How has she been keeping up with the homeschooling as far as the academics? How has that been going? And is that an ongoing process? Will she be graduating on time or early?
I think so. I mean, it's a self-paced. She's in a self-paced accredited program.
Okay.
And so she does definitely, there are times where she has some downtime and she just spends an entire day. Like she'll bang out a semester worth of content for one subject over the course of like 3 days, which tells you just how, yeah, that how focused and also how little they cover in school.
Oh, true, true. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Like they have to spread out all that time. Listen, she's not getting, I understand there are certain things she's not getting the benefit of being in a classroom and having conversations around the topic necessarily, but I think what she wants to do in her life, like, you know, she's got to let her follow her compass and kind of be there. I think probably what will happen, like one of the options for next year is to take the year and just bang it all out.
Mm-hmm. And finish then, it and complete it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then the challenge will be figuring out how to get in enough training to keep her where she is.
Yeah, she's been doing it all day long, every day.
Yeah, 8:30 to 4:30. And some days she's in the studio till 9:30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. To keep all that up for mm-hmm. sure. So she has, you have some, and she has some big decisions to make. And it looks like it's quite going to be an interesting journey over the next couple of years, a very exciting one.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I'm excited to see where she lands at 18, you know, and when she, because she'll be able to start auditioning for Broadway, all kinds of stages, regional, touring, all of that. So it'll be
next December. That'll be kind of the, you know, when she turns 17, that'll be like ripping off the bandaid. I think
mm-hmm.
she's leaning towards not attending a university or musical theater because she said, why would I do what I already know how to do and have already been trained how to do? She said, that's a waste of money. And so that might not be what everybody wants to hear, but you know.
Well, everybody, that's the whole point of the podcast, right? Everybody's journey is different. I just interviewed Curtis Holland, who has been in 5 Broadway shows, and he kept making mention of that. You know, listeners out there, everybody's journey is different. Everybody's going to land where they're supposed to land. But the point is, give yourself the chance. If you're that passionate, if you have the work ethic that Lila has, if you have the passion for it and the talent and ability, and you have a parent willing to support all of that, you, that journey is going to be different from someone who maybe finds musical theater while they're in high school. They're in a musical theater show as a sophomore in high school and find out that they can sing and that they're really good at this and didn't know. And now their journey is going to be different. They're going to do the collegiate path. They're going to, you know, it's going to be a little bit different. But, you know, everybody gets there if they're putting in that work. Yeah. So do you have, this has been great, really great information. I'm so excited that you could do this because we've been talking about it for so long, you know? And so I'm glad it all worked out for today. But do you have any last minute thoughts or advice for parents with a child similar to what you found with Lila?
I feel like my best advice would be to find someone like you and keep them as close as possible. Doesn't matter what the cost. It's worth it.
Well, you know, it's definitely a journey that if you have a mentor and you have somebody who's been there and done that, like you were saying earlier, and has been through it. And certainly, if, you know, I understand both sides of the industry, having had 3 children in the industry myself and then being in the industry myself. So, you know, I've got both sides of it. And so it is easier in that regard, I think, to if you're new and you don't know anything about it.
Yeah, no, I think definitely finding a mentor of some kind and don't be cheap when it comes to having the right people, because part of it is finding the right team and people who will love and support and come and like really be honest and give you the best of the best. Maybe that looks like if your kid is into musical theater, that's going to be someone who's training them in dance, right? Someone who's training them in voice, someone who can be a mentor who's trained people before, who like, you know what I mean? Like yourself. You know, I heard one of the voice teachers say once to someone, if you had just seen me once a month, as opposed to paying someone who was half the price, I could have kept you in a better place vocally. Absolutely. And it's hard to see that. Like, you don't see that when you're going through it. It's very much a unguided journey, if you will. You know what I mean? Like, you're like in a dark, like, remember that movie? Golden Child? Eddie Murphy?
Yes.
When he's got the glass of water and he's walking through this dark room and he's like stepping on these stepping stones and he can't see anything and he's singing. That's pretty much what it's like. But, like, you know, yeah, sometimes it's better to say, okay, if this is our budget, where can we get the best of this? Even if it's not every week.
Yes.
But it's once a month. Mm-hmm. And we've made that mistake at times because you just don't know what you don't know. And if you haven't been in that world before, many of us have not, then you don't have the experience to know the difference.
Absolutely. I've said that to many new clients. You don't know what you don't know. Yeah. And that's okay. You have to seek out and find people who can connect you and make you understand. And to your point in regard to, like, the lessons, you could be taking once a week every Tuesday at 4:15 with the lady down the street who retired from being a music teacher at school, or you could be taking once a month from someone who has been on Broadway, is, you know, a Juilliard, you know, whatever, you know, or, and it's going to cost you more, but what they're going to learn in that space and the connections it's going to give you are going to be life-changing.
And we did that, like, during COVID, when I finally, like, felt like I could breathe. Okay, well, nothing's happening right now, so I'm going to, like, cheap out on some voice lessons for a while, sure, just to have something that had no stakes, you know.
Keep her singing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but then you're like, okay, now I know that at this time we have to be game on, you know? So then you have to start saying, okay, well, that means that we're going to have to really start doubling down.
Yeah, you're back in for sure. So if any of the listeners would like to follow Lila's journey, get in touch with you in some way, can you share social media?
Oh, yeah. I think her Instagram is at Lila Pfefferly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And can you spell that for us?
Oh, LILAPFEFFERLE. And I do not believe currently her website is up, but her website will be up probably in the next 6 months. And that was lilapfefferly.com.
Okay. And do you have any issue if someone wanted to get in touch with you via social media?
Not at all. Yeah.
So what would that be?
It's at T Trigas, TTRIGAS.
Okay, beautiful.
Yeah, and that's on Insta.
Awesome. Thank you so much for this today. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, I love you guys so much.
Yeah, same.
I'm really excited for what's going to be in her future. I think I'm going to be spending a lot of money on tickets to ship this in. That's what's going to happen.
Well, there was a time where you said, I'm going to eat my hat if this doesn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think she's getting there. So anyway, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
If you'd like to connect with Teresa or Lila and continue to follow Lila's professional journey, follow her on Instagram at Lila Pfefferly and join me Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Need more information? Visit lbctalent.com and follow me on socials at @LisaSolak_LBCTalent. By sharing our stories, we can help other talented individuals land the career of their dreams. If you're enjoying this podcast, please like and subscribe below and hit the bell for notifications.